I will officially welcome you all to today's Clue and Internet Seminar, which will cover NARPM Presents, and in particular today's session is going to look at ORD Scientific and Engineering Technical Support for RPMs and others. And it's been sponsored by the U.S. EPA Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. My name is Jean Bounds, and I actually work in part of that very same office. I'll be helping to moderate today's Internet Seminar. We will officially kick off the presentation in about 3 minutes. But while we are going to give some of our latecomers a few extra minutes to hop on the line, I'll cover some basic instructions and housekeeping items. For those of you who are new to Clue and Seminars, Clue and Internet Seminars are very similar to conference calls. Each individual participant is required to register and obtain a copy of the presentation materials either through email or by downloading it from the seminar homepage. And you can either look at it as a PowerPoint presentation, look at it as a PDF file, or actually look at it through a web browser window. And you will be verbally guided through the materials. So the instructors will be indicating when to turn the page and move on to the next slide. If you don't have a copy of today's presentation materials open in front of you, I just want to remind you, you can get a copy of those materials from the seminar homepage, which you would have been directed to when you signed up for today's event. On that homepage, you were able to look at a complete description of today's presentation, as well as a listing of all the presenters and their contact information in addition to my own. That information will continue to be available, and on that same homepage, you'll find links at the bottom that will allow you to either go to the seminar or download the seminar as PowerPoint or PDF. So everybody should be looking at the seminar slides, and I'm going to ask everyone to move on past slide number one onto slide number two. If you have print copies in front of you, simply turn the page. If you are looking at the slides in a web browser window, those of you who do have them up that way, you'll notice a series of numerical links that appear on the left-hand side. So you can simply click to the next appropriate slide number. Or you can use the orange icons that appear at the top of your slides. The single arrow pointing to the left will move you forward one slide. The single arrow pointing to the left will move you backwards one slide. Just a reminder for those of you that are joining us by phones, please do put your phone on mute. You can use your own mute button or simply hit star 6 to mute your line. We do have breaks designated throughout today's presentation, and at that point, you'll be invited to take yourself off of mute to actually ask a question and interact live with the instructors by hitting pound 6. But until then, keep yourself on mute with the star 6 command. Also, don't put the call on hold. There could be background music or commercials that could be disruptive. If you do need to, you are welcome to hang up and dial back into the line. You won't disrupt us. There won't be any entry or exit tones at that time. So again, keep us on mute with the star 6 command and do not put us on hold. This is a reminder, we do have breaks designated throughout the presentations for Q&A. At that point, those of you on the phone lines will be invited to unmute and ask the questions out loud. Those of you that are streaming the audio online, or anyone who's looking at the slides through a web browser window, won't actually have the opportunity to type up a question. You'll notice the question mark icon located at the top of the slides. If you click that, as long as your pop-up blockers have been disabled, a new window will open up, which will allow you to type up your comments or questions for the instructors. Again, you are encouraged to submit your questions in writing in advance. You don't have to wait until the breaks, but please know we won't read them or answer them until we get to those designated break slides throughout today's presentation. You can also use that very same question mark icon to report any technical difficulties you may have. You just want to be sure to include a telephone number where you can be reached. One of the other reminders that I will provide to everybody, again, our presenters will be indicating as they move through the materials, so you'll have to manually change the slides or move through at their verbal cues. If you have any problems following along, go ahead and feel free to speak up on the line or type up a question and let me know. We will also, at the end of today's presentation, point people to two very important links, one being a resources link where you can download not only today's presentation, but a variety of other resources that have been collected relative to today's session. And the second link will be a short feedback form. So if you're looking to get credit for today's session or confirmation of your participation, you want to hang on tight and listen for information when you submit feedback and how you can get one of those records for your own purposes. The final reminder I have for everyone today is that today's presentation is being recorded and will be archived on the Clue and website within 1 to 2 weeks. You'll be able to download it from the Clue and webpage in a few different formats to replay it online, and you will automatically receive an email reminder from me as soon as that recording is available. You're welcome to forward that email on to anyone you think that will find it useful, or you can certainly go ahead and browse the over 400 recorded seminars that we have available for free through the Clue In website, which is listed on slide number two. Those are the end of the official reminders that I have for everyone, and I'm going to ask if you could now move along to slide number 3, where we'll begin the official presentation today. I'm going to turn things over to Felicia Barnett from the U.S. EPA's Office of Research Development with the Office of Science Policy. Felicia?
Thank you, Jean. I want to welcome everybody on the lines, those for the afternoon and those that are still morning on the other coast. The Superfunding Technology Liaison Program, as you can see from the slide, is where I'm going to start with this presentation. I'm hoping that a lot of people already have at least met their technology liaison within the programs, so we can move on to slide 4. And I'm going to give a quick overview of EPA and the ORD organization as kind of a lead into both the technology liaison, the tech support project, and the labs and centers. And also our latter part is going to be the technical support centers, as well as some examples of work that they have done for us, for the regions. Obviously, how's EPA organized? Hopefully, a lot of people on the line already know this, so I'm going to go through these pretty quickly. And then our EPA regional map, where the different regions are and which ones the areas are attached to. And then how is ORD organized? For those who are not very familiar with the Office of Research and Development, this is a standing for the different labs and centers, and also where the Superfund Technology Liaison Program sits within the Office of Science Policy, directly under the Deputy Assistant Administrator for Science. Here's our ORD lab locations, the different offices, and as noted, each region has a Superfund and Technology Liaison located in the regional offices. I believe there's only one that's a vacant position right now. And so I'm going to give you a little overview of the STL program. It was established in 1990 in an agreement between ORD and the regions and OSWR, and our primary purpose is to establish ORD points of contact within the regions to facilitate access to the labs. Each of the STLs has expertise within certain fields, whether it be geology, engineering, and they also can provide direct support on their own. I know that we do, you know, reviews and stuff ourselves, as well as for the getting access to the laboratory personnel to assist with reviews or going on to sites and providing technical support. Obviously, the headquarters is in D.C., and the STLs are posted in each of the regions. While the work that's done is coordinating technical support, providing direct technical support, as I said, with our own expertise, facilitating technology and information transfer, and communicate research priorities. And this is a little diagram we put together support to kind of see where all the different parts fall together and how the STLs try to provide coordination. For those, I'm sure, that are familiar with the technical support project, the STLs are a part of that, helping with the regional forums, obviously the technical support centers, and coordination even with the ERT if people are interested. As I said, here's a list of each regional contact if you don't know yours. It always can't hurt to go by and visit your people. Diana Cutt is new in Region 2. And Region 8 is where our vacant position is right now. With Kathleen Graham just moved on to a new position, and we're very happy for her. Like I said, this is part of the technical support project. For those who have done any work with the groundwater forums, the groundwater, the engineering, and the other regional forums, federal facilities, or the ERT response team, we help with coordination with those as well. Another quick diagram of where some of these positions are located, where the tech support centers are, and how they're set up. So at that, I'm going into the Site Characterization and Monitoring Technical Support Center and some of the support it provides. I am actually also the director, along with being the region for STL. I provide director duties for the Site Characterization and Monitoring Technical Support Center. So if you have questions about that, you can always get in touch with me. Obviously, as the name implies, we provide site characterization support through state-of-the-science methods, technologies, to help identify contaminants and methods for providing site characterization and monitoring. I put up our link and website here. A quick list of, you know, obviously some of the basics of the program. It's operated by the STL program. It provides geostatistical, statistical design, analysis, and expertise, geophysics, GIS, and interpretation. This is also, there's a lot of work that's done between all the different centers together. The Engineering Tech Support Center and ADA Groundwater Tech Support Center all work in conjunction with the Site Characterization and Monitoring Tech Support Center. So sometimes this work will be done by one or two of the centers together.
Felicia, just a quick question.
Sure.
People have asked to remind them what slide number you're on.
Oh, sir. We're on slide 18. Sorry about that.
No problem. Thank you.
And this is just a quick for FY10. We're getting ready to put out our the technical support for FY11. But a quick breakdown of the site, of the regions, and the number of sites that the Site Characterization and Technical Support Center worked on in FY10. So we'll move on to slide 19. I'll try to remember to keep saying the slide numbers. And just a couple of examples of some of the major technical support we did over that past year. Statistical support, source allocation, fingerprinting, isotope analysis, mercury monitoring support, remote monitoring design, and I've listed some of the sites that work was done on. If anybody has any questions about that kind of work, they can get in touch with me. On to slide 20, statistical support, site characterization, remediation, exposure, and risk assessments are based on limited data. And we all know that there's only so much money to go around. And certainly site characterization and risk estimates based on data can suffer from uncertainties. So statistical analysis and statistical monitoring plans are useful in helping to determine the amount of samples that can be taken and still feel fairly confident while limiting that number that you're getting good data. As you can see, you can help to meet your DQOs this way and get 95% upper confidence limits, upper tolerance limits is T-test and Wilcon rank sum test. And to set up monitoring plans or do a statistical analysis on the data that you've got. I've got a list of some of the guidance that would be useful to help those who are not as familiar with statistics, not my area of expertise as well, but I've learned a whole lot more about it as we've been working on these.
And just a reminder, you're on slide 22?
Yes, we are now on slide 22, getting ready to move to slide 23. For some of the statistical support programs that the Tech Support Center has put together is available. For those who are not familiar with ProUCL, I recommend going to the web page. And I think most people or the RPNs run across it more frequently when dealing with the risk assessors or from PRPs who send in and say, we've been using ProUCL, and they request support from the Tech Support Center, the Site Characterization Monitoring Tech Support Center, to actually help them evaluate whether the program was used properly. But for those who are familiar with it, it's been highly used, and we get a lot of work that comes from the use of the ProUCL program, and a fair bit of outside the states as well use the program. So a lot. If it comes up in the review, we do help and support the program. Not only do we create it, but we also do tech support for it. So people with questions about it can turn into the Tech Support Center to request review or comments or just to look over if it was done properly. Also, we do quite a number of things on fingerprinting, isotope analysis, and source allocation. Environmental forensic fingerprinting is much like criminal fingerprinting. Sometimes you don't know what you've got until you go out and do it. You go out and take the samples. When you get it back in and analyze it, then you may or may not have what you want. However, it has proved very useful at a number of sites in terms of source allocation And the only way to determine if it's going to be useful for your site sometimes is to take the samples and determine if it is. And other times we may have a better feel, but certainly you can turn to the Tech Support Center to ask questions about it. And I have a few slides here. We're on that slide 25, discussing chemical isomers and congeners and isotopes that have been used in fingerprinting. And some of those have been very useful in dioxin analysis and others for determining sources. I've got a link on slide 26 for the EPA guidance on assessing biodegradation of organic groundwater contaminants using isotope analysis for those who are interested. And one of the other issues that we've addressed recently has been mercury characterization and monitoring at a number of sites related to characterization issues in sediments and soils. And we've had some people on staff who are very experienced with mercury contaminated sites and modeling of the mercury flux through the different materials. On slide 28, I've just got a list of some of the things that we did, develop a soil cleanup, assisting in flux modeling, and review of documents, which, as I said, the Tech Support Centers do as much as we possibly can with the amount of funding. Moving on to slide 29, we also have done a fair bit of work with remote monitoring, developing integrated low-cost systems that can be accessed through the web. And so the monitoring, especially when you're dealing with things like pH and other easily attainable sensor monitoring networks, these can keep you from having to have somebody at remote sites, especially the mining sites, this has been fairly useful on. On slide 30, something about the philosophy of remote monitoring, providing near-term performance information, integrated multi-system design, and remote control of data collection, and alarm capabilities for when you don't have people on site. Moving on to slide 31, just a quick slide for showing you some of the sensors that have been used in remote monitoring. And for those who might be interested, again, you can contact the Tech Support Center about questions about remote monitoring. And on 32 is the same, a camera and a leg sensor, showing some of the remote monitoring equipment. Moving on to slide 33, again, talking about how remote monitoring has been used, collecting information from the existing containment system in order to provide future treatment design, monitoring the effectiveness of many remediation techniques from a remote standpoint, like I said, especially on sites that are remotely located and not easily accessible in wintertime and other and for other reasons. Moving on to slide 34 is asking, I think we're going to wait for question and answer to the question and answer session, but I'm just going to make a few quick comments about the Tech Support Center. Obviously, this is funded through cooperation with ORD and OSWER. There is a certain amount of funding for providing tech support to the regions that's available with no charge to the regions. After a certain point, if it's a very large and complex project, then we may be asking for assisted funding from the regions. But in general, it's always good to, you know, ask to go out and see if the Tech Support Center has something that's available that can help you out. And with that, we're going to move on to slide 35, and David Reisman and the Engineering Technical Support Center. Dave?
Thanks, Felicia. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Great. I'll go quickly through this. I don't have a lot to say. A lot of people already know us and know what we do. As Felicia said, I'm on slide 35, going to slide 36. Right now we're in our 23rd year, going into our 24th year. Actually, we're starting our 24th year of technical support. So next year we celebrate our 25th anniversary along with the Groundwater Tech Support Center. Both Dave Burden and I are in the same ORD Division, Office of Research and Development Division, the National Risk Management Research Laboratory. He's an ADA. I'm in Cincinnati. Both of us travel quite a bit to sites. Going to slide 37, Felicia's already given you a lot of the background. The purpose of the Tech Support Centers, and mainly the Engineering Tech Support Center, we kind of divide up remediation and work with the regional remedial project managers and also the on-scene coordinators as well as headquarters. We do some RCRA corrective action and work with ORCR and also very strongly with the Superfund program, TIFSD, did I say that right? TIFSD or whatever it is. The project consists basically of a network. We work closely, Dave works closely with the groundwater forum, I work with the engineering forum, and both of us and Felicia tend to work with the federal facilities program on various facilities. I'm going to slide 38. From our beginning, the objectives of the Engineering Tech Support Center basically is to enhance the communication for those working in the region or on Superfund or other sites. I act more as a middleman, or you'll work directly with me or work directly with our scientists, and we just keep track of the communication. So it's a direct link between our researchers and RPMs. There's examples in every region right now. In several of the regions, we have what are ongoing applied research projects. The way it works is the region gets a need fulfilled. For example, in Region 7 in Omaha, one of the questions the region posed to ORD is we need a study to see if our removal actions in Omaha for lead removal are still protective after 8 or 9 years. That's just one example, and our researchers then develop quality assurance project plans, sampling plans. All of these go through reviews, then we go out in the field, collect the data, and eventually submit a report to the region, because the region is basically our client, telling them, answering the original questions and giving them additional information. The researchers, what they get out of this is publications in their area of expertise, which always helps them. And obviously with ORD's peer review policy for promotions, that's how those papers are one way that they move up in the career ladder. As I mentioned, we basically work directly with headquarters and the regions. And since the beginning, when we were the original START program, even before the Engineering Tech Support Center, our goal, because we are part of research and development, is to develop remediation and innovative technologies. We're working on quite a few right now, especially in nanotechnology and in soil remediation. One particular area we're working on is PCB treatment, both in soil and sediment. We have a couple ongoing, just ready to start a new project in that area. And finally, because we're ORD, we have, which is sometimes one of the blockades, because it takes a while sometimes to go through peer review, depending on what level of the study it is. We basically have to go through peer review. We use sound science and engineering practices. We have quality assurance project plans, sampling plans, and, of course, health and safety plans. Going on to the next slide. What types of support for those that haven't received support? We pretty much run the gamut depending on budget and staffing availability, reviews of site-associated engineering documents, all the way from preliminary site assessments. We work with regional site assessment managers all the way through to basically site closure. We do work on closure issues. Anything from landfills to bioreactors to biochemical reactors to vapor extraction, looking at remedial investigation, feasibility studies, alternative treatment methods. Our experts basically go on-site as well as do some off-site research. We're available by telephone consultation. Many of us work in alternative workplaces where I am now. We do bench field and pilot scale treatability studies right now in our laboratory here in Cincinnati. We have four ongoing bench scale and treatability studies that are designed for the region. The latest one we're doing for Callahan Mine up in Maine looking at, and that's particularly a new area. We're looking at tailings dam and draining, getting the water out of the tailings dam, treating it, and then releasing it in the estuary. As I mentioned, we go from support from assessment through design construction all the way to site completion. And not only do we have the expertise in Cincinnati, but as everybody knows, with cutbacks in federal hiring, we supplement all of our work. Right now we have six available contractors with about 20 subcontractors. So almost every major environmental consulting firm we have access to, or in conjunction with Dave Burden and the Groundwater Tech Support Center, we have access to the groundwater through him. And the next slide, which is 40. New technologies and new methods. In the last 5 to 10 years, we've developed quite a few new technologies. I won't go through all the ones listed there. These are the researchers from doing the bench pilot scale, going out in the field, looking at some of the things that are being done, variations of existing technologies, and quite a few that aren't listed on there are commonly used technologies that were developed 20 years ago and now are in common use. Going to slide 41, for those, and this is probably, depending on your computer, it's kind of shrunk down on my computer, these are in our annual reports, which we produce an annual report from the previous fiscal year that usually comes out in January or February each year. Basically the chart shows on the top is the number of actions, and action is defined as any time a written record is produced by the project manager for ETSC, for example, records of communication, a review, site review or site travel, trip report, any of those, that's an action. So the top is the graphic in actions. The bottom are the number of sites where we have done active work that particular fiscal year. And you'll see a bottom trend in number of actions, which possibly has to do with the director taking a 16-month detail. But now I'm back. So going to slide 42, this goes by the regions, the number of actions in the regions. And basically you get the distribution. As you can see, we're in all 10 regions. This was for FY10. I can tell you FY11, especially in the middle, regions 5 and 7 are going to be a lot higher, thanks to the STLs in those regions, working closely with our tech support center. So I think you'll see some rises there. Region 10 and region 3 should be pretty much the same. Going to slide 43, and hopefully this is easier to read on your computer than my computer, but again, it's in our annual report, and if you want to see this present year's annual report, all of your STLs have a copy, or you can just email me and I can email you a copy. Basically, all this was showing is are the technologies that we're reviewing inside the center and reviewing either being used actively on a site or proposed to be used on a site. And it basically shows the variation of all the technologies that are being used. The next slide on slide 44 shows you the chemicals of concern, the major chemicals of concern working on sites. Since we do, in conjunction with the Groundwater Tech Support Center, for example, vapor extraction and vapor intrusion issues, we still get VOCs, but our number one contaminant of concern basically is the metals group. And obviously, because we work on a lot of mining sites across the United States, one of the major issues of mining sites are the metals and the material left on site is in the water. On to slide 45, and I'm basically concluding on the Engineering Tech Support Center. We also have two other tech support centers in Cincinnati, and I said that I would say something about the Eco Center, which Mike Kravitz directs, and that's basically a focal point. Most of the eco risk assessors in each region are well aware of this center, and the other center, both of these are in NCEA, the National Center for Environmental Assessment here in Cincinnati, the Health Risk Assessment Tech Support Center, which I helped start years ago, clear back in 1987. Both of those centers, as I mentioned, are in Cincinnati, and your risk assessors in every region are well aware of that. If you aren't, you just have to talk to your risk assessors. So as long as I was doing the one, I figured to mention the other two centers. But basically, those are the three centers in Cincinnati. And the Engineering Tech Support Center, if you need to put in a request, we did have an online request system, but with ORD reorganizing some of its website, that's kind of down for now. You just send an email to me or give me a call. And I'm not sure if my cell phone's listed, but if you call the office and leave a message, I'll get your message. And so I think I'm done with my part, and I assume David Burden's next.
Yes.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hey. All right. I'm Dave Burden. I am the third part of the three tech support centers. I'm director of the Groundwater Tech Support Center located in Ada, Oklahoma. And those of you not familiar where Ada, Oklahoma is, we are 90 miles southeast of Oklahoma City. We are one of the 10 research labs within ORD. Slide 47, I'll just go through what our mission is. It's similar to what Felicia and Dave have already mentioned, because since we kind of work in conjunction with one another. But our mission is to develop critical links between ORD scientists and the folks in the EPA making decisions, and to channel that expertise to EPA's operating programs. We attempt to facilitate the use of best scientific understanding to solve the real-world problems that we are facing out there. And then thirdly, we serve as a conduit to ensure that the research that we do here in this division, the Groundwater and Ecosystem Restoration Division, and NIRML is addressing the most important problems that the agency is facing today. Slide 48. I'll go through just some main objectives of the Groundwater Tech Support Center, and that is, one, to improve the communication between the EPA program and regional offices and ORD laboratories, and then most importantly, to provide scientific and technical support and assistance to EPA region and regional staff by giving you access to ORD scientists and engineers and other technical experts. Slide 49. We try to ensure that the use of sound science and engineering practices and the application of site characterization technologies and the implementation of remedial solutions. And then lastly, we participate and present technology workshops, training courses, and state of the science information for site managers, RPMs, in Superfund, RCRA, and occasionally on brownfield sites. As you go through these slides, you'll see I've put in different pictures, and these are just some of the activities that our researchers and tech support staff are involved with in sites across the country. slide 50. Our main goal is to provide quick response technical assistance to the programming regional staff on CERCLA and brown and RCRA and brownfields and ecosystem restoration issues. What do I mean by quick response? We try to shoot for 45 days or less on providing tech support. And so when you contact us, I will tell you that we need at least 45 days. Many times we can do it quicker than that, but we at least like to have 45 days, and that's just because we usually have other tech support requests in the queue and that we're working on, so we just can't drop what we're doing and immediately get on yours, so we have to rotate those into our system. And then secondly, we provide guidance in the planning of site characterization investigations, remedial investigation, feasibility studies. Slide 51, we provide support in identification and selection of environmental modeling applications. And I'll talk a little bit more in the next few slides about our Center for Subsurface Modeling support. And then we also provide oversight assistance in design testing and evaluation of new and innovative technologies. Slide 52, our groundwater tech support team consists of several components. First of all, it is the core of the program is the scientist in what we call the applied research and technical support branch. Then we have other branches within this division. We have the subsurface remediation branch and the ecosystem and subsurface protection branch. So occasionally we draw upon scientists in these branches as well to help us on tech support. And then we also draw upon scientists in other divisions within the National Risk Management Research Lab. And then we also have field support staff in a third branch that we can call upon them if we need field support staff. Slide 53, the second component of our groundwater tech support team is our contractor, and our contractor is Shaw Environmental, and they're an on-site contractor, and they provide expertise to address technical support questions, and basically they're just an add-on to our EPA staff. And we have also, through the contract, we have access to additional expertise via subcontractors and consultants. And then the third thing that Shaw Environmental does is they man the day-to-day operation of our Center for Subsurface Modeling Support, or COSMOS as we call it. Slide 54 gives you just a snapshot of the last 3 years of the number of sites that we have worked on. And similar to what Dave Reisman talked about activities, or we call them responses. So a particular site may have multiple responses to it. So therefore, the number of responses is always going to be greater than the number of sites that we have worked on. Slide 55 just shows you a pie chart of the sites, number of sites in each region. For some reason, when this slides get ported over, the black piece of pie there is Region 4, and it should show 11 sites that we worked on in Region 4 in FY10. So pretty good cross-section. We were working in, again, similar to Dave and Felicia, we work in all 10 regions. Some regions we get more work than others, but pretty good cross-section of work in all 10 regions. Slide 56, I mentioned I'll talk a little bit about our modeling center. COSMOS, as we call it, is an integral part of our groundwater tech support center, and I also serve as director of our modeling center. And what the modeling center does, it provides readily access to our public domain groundwater and vadose zone modeling software. And we have a website, and all our software is free of charge to download. There's no charge for any of it. And it's free to government agencies, universities, state agencies, just anybody. So the Modeling Center provides, similar to the Tech Support Center, provides direct technical support to EPA and state decision makers on subsurface modeling applications and to give day-to-day tech support, whether it's calling in on the phone or sending in an email. Our staff there can help you with answering questions you may have about the models that we distribute. We also provide GIS and database development support to our researchers, and if that includes doing some technical support, GIS or database work that's involved with tech support, then that's where that comes in also. Slide 58, like I mentioned, COSMOS is supported both by EPA scientists, such as myself, and our contractor. Specialties include hydrogeology, chemistry, soil science, biology. You name it, we probably got somebody that has an expertise in that. The Modeling Center provides assistance in model conceptualization, model development and application. Occasionally we do some model training and education, and then obviously a big part of our work is the model distribution. Slide 59, we distribute 30 different groundwater models or VadoZone models, decision support tools, via our website, and the web address there is there on the slide. So I encourage you to go to that site and look at the software that we offer, and you can read a short description of each model that we do distribute. Just some statistics about our modeling center. Since 1996, we distributed more than 200,000 copies of our software and provided technical support on more than 6,000 requests. And then in FY10, model distribution was over 16,000, and we average about 1,300 a month. So if we have a new model that comes out, those numbers usually kick up in a particular month. But if we don't have a new model that's coming out, then they just pretty much level off as the amount of models that we distribute or models that are downloaded off our website. Slide 61 is just questions. I'll go to the next slide. Slide 62 is just a screenshot of our website, and encourage you to visit that. And if you have any questions, please contact me. And that's all I have.
Okay, I believe on slide number 63, we're ready to turn things over to Kira Lynch.
Okay, thanks, Jean. As Jean said, my name's Kira Lynch, and I'm the Superfund Tech Liaison for Region 10. I'm actually going to present to you a case study today that is a project that I was the RPM for when I received this different type of technical support, and just hopefully talk a little bit about so you can get a better understanding of how accessing these technical support centers can really benefit you. I just also wanted to address one of the questions that came in from one of the website questions was a question about technical support from TIVC and ERT and how what we're talking about here relates to the technical support that you can get from those other mechanisms. And this is a project where I actually got technical support from all three of the ORD technical support centers, and I also received technical support from the Technology Innovation and Field Services Division. So I think to answer your question, these are all different mechanisms that are available to RPMs to receive assistance on their projects, and we usually try to work collaboratively with the various programs, and that's something that your Superfund Tech Liaison in your region can help you to navigate as an RPM if you're not familiar with kind of what kind of services are available from those different mechanisms.
Kira, this is Felicia. I'd like to back that one up because there's a lot of sites that I've done as part of the site characterization tech support centers where we've worked with ERT and the groundwater tech support center and sometimes engineering tech support all at once where everybody's doing a part of the work to help the RPM out. So easily the STLs hopefully in your region can help you with, you know, finding who can do what for you.
Great. Thanks, Felicia. So going on to slide number 64, the site that I'm going to talk about today is the Eastern Mashat Superfund site. It's a site in southeast Idaho. It includes two facilities, the FMC facility and then the Simplot facility, and then there's also areas of the site where there was aerial deposition of contamination. The Simplot facility produced phosphoric acid for fertilizer, and it's actually still operating where the FMC facility was an elemental phosphorus manufacturing facility. So you have a lot of the issues associated with mining activities, lots of waste material from the ore processing, and groundwater contamination associated with both sites. The entire site is about 2,400 acres, and another complicating factor here is that the majority of the FMC facility is actually within the Fort Hall reservation boundary. So going on to slide number 65, this is just to kind of orient you a little bit. You can see that we have three operable units, where the FMC operable unit is made up of the area that's owned by FMC. The Simplot operable unit is the property owned by Simplot, and then the off-plant is areas offside of those facilities that have been impacted. And I think one of the important things to point out here is, like many of our large, complicated sites, because this site involves many stakeholders, including the local communities and the tribe and Idaho DEQ, there's a lot of kind of like disagreements about technical issues and other things, and that's where when I took over this project in 2007, I felt that the assistance that I could get through outside technical experts was going to be really critical to me as an RPM to helping to try to get consensus and move this project forward. So going on to slide number 66, this just shows you aerial photograph of the site itself. You can see in the background the Simplot structure is where they're still manufacturing, and that big black mountain behind them is actually what they call the gypse stack. So that's all kind of waste material from the ore processing, and then on the right-hand side there you can also see the waste pile from the FMC manufacturing. So going on to slide number 67. I mentioned this briefly before, but like I said, there's many stakeholders involved in the project. The project has been around for a long time. There's a lot of differences in opinions about what should be done about the waste remaining on the site and how to control it. Going on to slide number 68, we also have a very kind of significant resource-intensive EPA team that's been devoted to working on this site to try to move it along since 2007. So we have a lot of involvement of the actual Office of Environmental Assessment here in Region 10 with risk assessment and hydrogeologic support. And I think one of the reasons that I like to kind of emphasize this is I think that from my experience as an RPM, one of the things that really makes a successful project is to have a really a strong technical team. And in this particular case, the ORD scientists and the other experts that came in to help us have basically been integrated into our project team and help us as a team as a whole. So it's not like they come in and they do their own separate thing and then go away. On all of the efforts, they've been integrated in, they've been part of our technical team. The technical people in the office, for example, the hydrogeologists here, work closely with the technical support people that we got from the modeling center that David talked about to help us understand their comments. So it really is a team collaborative effort that you can get through this process. Going on to slide number 69. This is just an overview of some of the technical support that we've received, and this is basically all. I know some of these people have been involved before I was involved, but this is all since we've been working on the project since 2007 to try to really focus it and get it back on track. So we've had the experts in the area of engineering, we've had risk assessment support, help with groundwater fate and transport, on RAD characterization. Then in addition to that, we also had an IAG that was put in place for technical support from the Corps of Engineers to help with looking at specifically some elemental phosphorus technologies. And the headquarters TIPSI office has come in and assisted with a independent design review to look at the groundwater pump and treat system at Simplot. So this is an example of where we use the Groundwater Tech Support Center to help with things, but we also utilized TIPSI to help with this independent design review. So going on to slide number 70. Some of the challenges of working with the EMF site is that, for one thing, we have at the FMC facility alone, we have over 25 million cubic yards of slag, and we have this elemental phosphorus over large portions of the site, which is ignitable and reactive when it's brought to the surface. And I think that's one of the controversial things that's really needed us to make sure that we had applied the best science at the site. There's the tribe and some other stakeholders are adamant that they want that material removed, and I think it was very important for the agency to be able to show that we had put the best science into this project to really look at all options for being able to do that. And I think as an RPM, this has become extremely critical for me because this issue has been raised up to Maddie and to Lisa Jackson, and I've been, you know, had to basically go through the scrutiny all the way up to those levels to say, you know, have you really used the best science within the EPA to try to deal with some of these things? So the involvement of ORD and the independent technical support that we've gotten from TIPSI was really important in being able to talk with management about what we have and haven't done to try to look at solutions there. We also had a really poorly written ROD from 1998, so this team has really been looking at kind of how do we do ROD amendments basically for all three of the OUs. Some of the other factors is that we have a part of the site where we've got an operating facility that's got ongoing chemical releases that have really severely altered the geochemistry. They are basically releasing phosphoric acid into the subsurface to the extent that they had released enough phosphoric acid that we have groundwater wells at the site that when we purge groundwater from them, they come up at a pH of less than 2. Of 1.9. So, you know, having the geochemical support that we got from Rick Wilkin has been really critical in helping us to try to understand what we do about the severe situation. And then finally, for the FMC site, I know that the Engineering Tech Support Center has really been involved. There's many aspects out there. There's not only the work that the removal, that the remedial program is working on, but we also have some emergency response action work and some RCRA work that's ongoing out there that the tech support center, the engineering tech support center has been involved in. Going on to slide number 71. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the specific tech support that we got from each of the centers for the site and some of the things that the engineering tech support center has been involved in. We're looking at stopping ongoing groundwater impacts from water infiltrating through the Simplot gypsum stack. And to do that, we're looking at putting a liner on top of that gypsum stack, and the Engineering Tech Support Center has helped with looking at the design and how to implement that for the Simplot facility. They've also been very involved in the decisions for the FMC site, helping us with looking at the phosphine gas generation that's being generated in some of the old ponds, as well as looking at the whole feasibility study for what we're going to do about the CERCLA area of the site and all of the elemental phosphorus that we know is in the subsurface there. One of the other things that we were looking closely at for FMC was a evapotranspiration cap, and the Engineering Tech Support Center also supplied an internal EPA expert on ET caps to help us with the review and evaluation of the ET cap design. So, you know, basically the Engineering Tech Support Center has been involved in almost all of the aspects, all of the key technical aspects of both the FMC and the Simplot operable unit, and they've been working with us on the site for over 5 years. Going on to slide number 72, the Groundwater and Ecosystems Restoration Tech Support Center, they have been integral in helping us to look at the groundwater modeling review that was done by FMC, which really was a key component of the remedy decision for this site. In the original ROD, FMC, that was signed in 1998, FMC had, you know, made a claim that they didn't need to do anything about the groundwater, and a lot of this was based on modeling that hadn't been adequately quantified, and the modeling that was being done was really a key factor in EPA making a decision about whether we were going to require something in regards to groundwater extraction treatment in addition to anything that we were going to do about the old ponds and other areas. So specifically requiring a groundwater action, which is something that we have moved forward with, was critical that we had good review and documentation about what we thought about the modeling that was being done by FMC. So in this case, we didn't do the actual modeling, but the Groundwater Tech Support Center supplied me with experts to help review the modeling that was being done by the PRP. And then in addition to that, as I mentioned earlier, we have some really complicated issues in regards to the geochemical fate and transport of metals and phosphorus from the Simplot facility because of the altered conditions in the subsurface from the release of phosphoric acid, and the support in that area has been critical as well. Going on to slide number 73, some of the support that we've received from the Site Characterization and Monitoring Tech Support Center, there were a number of questions specifically from the Shoshone-Bennett tribe about rad contamination and how it was distributed, especially in the off-plant areas. So we have received a lot of support from the Las Vegas rad experts. They brought out their real-time on-site in-situ gamma analysis instrument, and we were able to go to areas that the tribe pointed to, and it really helped us with giving them more confidence that we had an independent assessment of, with real-time data, of what background rad concentrations were in the area. We've also obtained assistance with groundwater statistics review on the groundwater data, and we received support from experts in Las Vegas once again on designing a geophysical investigation to better understand the groundwater flow coming from both facilities. One of the other areas that we have received assistance from is from the Superfund Health Risk Technical Support Center. As I mentioned earlier, we have phosphoric acid that was being released from Simplot, and the phosphoric acid quickly changes to orthophos in the subsurface, and there were some questions about human health risk associated with exposure to orthophos, and there was no kind of risk basis to compare that against. So I had contacted them, and they prepared for us what's called a provisional peer-reviewed toxicity reference value for phosphorus. So what that gave us was a number to be able to look at the groundwater data and say, you know, are the concentrations of phosphorus, we know that they're harmful to the ecological environment when they mix with surface water, but are they also at levels that would be harmful to a human drinking them? going on to slide number 74, this is just kind of a summary of some of the things that I've already mentioned as I've gone through these slides. But, you know, from my standpoint as an RPM, the assistance that I've been able to get from all of these experts, especially on such a complicated site where it's got so much visibility, has just been very valuable, and something that as an RPM has made me feel more confident that at least I'm trying to apply the best science on the decisions that I'm making. And the various areas, I think as RPMs, especially on some of these complicated sites where we've got groundwater modeling and we've got fate and transport issues, we just can't be experts on all of these things. But what we can do is we can surround ourselves with a technical team that can really help us to make sure that we're really understanding how all of these aspects are potentially impacting the way that we're proceeding and making our decisions, and support us in that. So going on to slide number 75, I think we're going to hold for questions. So I think I'm turning this over to Dan now with slide number 76.
Thanks, Kira. I'm Dan Kellerman. I'm with Region 7. I'm a remedial project manager in the LEED program, and the presentation that I have here is concerning the Madison County Mines Superfund site and some of the ORD support that I received just becoming a new project manager. I was somewhat overwhelmed with all of the responsibilities of project management, and a couple of issues that arise during the site. We'll go to the next slide. Involved one of the site-specific contracts involved in doing the LEED remediation. Just a brief background of the site. This site is located in the old LEED belt in southeast Missouri. I think it's documented to be the oldest LEED mine site west of the Mississippi. The Native Americans were actually mining the LEED when when French explorers or Spanish explorers actually encountered their activities, and then through the Louisiana Purchase acquisition, the French acquired the property, and then ultimately it was deeded out to private mining corporations. But the entire Madison County or the entire site encompasses the entire county, which is approximately 498 square miles with 13 major tailings and chat piles. A good part of the distribution of mine waste resulted from contractors using the available mine waste, which was free to the taking for the public and for contractors. And so consequently, they dispersed these materials throughout residential properties, and consequently, these discoveries were made in the late 1980s. We'll go to the next slide here. This is just an aerial, or not an aerial photograph, a map of the major chat piles and subsites within the county, most of which are concentrated around the small cities and towns in Madison County. Slide 79, again, this site was added to the MPL in 2003, and then the removal actions for time critical removal, which was concentrations over 1,200 parts per million, was implemented as well in 2003. Removal actions for these high concentrations, even though all properties had not yet been sampled, ceased in 2006, and then the remedial action to address the additional 1,100 to 1,500 residential properties was implemented in 2008. I took this project on, again, having worked for the state of Kansas, but not in the Superfund or LEED programs for 18 years. So coming in new, I adopted a site-specific contract. And it sounds really simple to get in there and remove sample and remove LEED from people's properties. Of course, this brings on a whole set of concerns to the community and the individual property owners. those restoration issues being really important to the acceptance of our actions and of course our success as well. As a result of this first site-specific contract that was awarded in the remedial program, which again started in the fall of 2008, upon me accepting the responsibility for this site and trying to get up to speed on the documentation that the contractor was providing, we found a data gap in their collection of backfill and topsoil sampling. Of course, it's one thing to remove the contamination, but Madison County being extremely widespread with lead contamination, there's not a lot of clean backfill available. And consequently, it was discovered that approximately 77 residential properties had been backfilled with unverified backfill, or not qualified backfill, that we didn't know if it exceeded the performance standard or not. Approximately 250 cubic yards is what each property was backfilled with, and the sampling to confirm the clean backfill is pretty minimal, although statistically significant. Essentially, the contractor failed to, even though they assured us that that information was available and they continued to state that they would provide it, they never could provide us the backfill confirmations, which put us in a situation of potentially having to go out and sample each individual property in order to determine that we have not backfilled with contaminated backfill materials. Go to the following slide, just a photograph of a typical residential remediation site. Typically the properties, if the larger properties are broken into four quadrants, and each quadrant is then sampled and whatever quadrant is defined to require remediation, those of course are the quadrants that are targeted. The question, of course, that I had was what sampling would be required to not only minimize the amount of work that the contractor had to do, although that was not an overriding concern, but managing the property. I was, again, somewhat overwhelmed at what could possibly be done to, you know, at least reach a 95% confidence level of assurance that once these properties are resampled, that we don't have any issues with backfill. So, with the support of ORD, they reviewed all of the sampling information that the contractor had previously provided for the backfill and the topsoil, and then they also provided a draft statistically based sampling plan for our review, and then also reviewed the sampling plan that the contractor provided in order to assure that again, we were going to statistically meet an acceptable level of sampling to confirm that these properties were, in fact, safe for occupancy. And then finally, ORD delivered a sampling plan to the region to consequently provide to the contractor and build that into their sampling plan. Again, with these 77 properties that were in question, ORD recommended a random collection of 8 samples from 3 backfill periods for lead, resulting in 24 or more samples. Losing track of my own presentation here. For all the other analytes, which, you know, we had some other heavy metals of concerns, manganese and cadmium, they'd recommended sampling of 8 of 77 properties. These were not these were not high concentrations that we were generally concerned with in the process, because typically remediating the lead contamination conversely cleans up the other heavy metals generally to acceptable levels. The contractor obviously incorporated the ORD sampling plan into their sampling plan, and with the hope that no significant detections were observed, you know, in excess of what standards were set for the site. The need to have to go back out and re-excavate these properties creates quite a concern for the community, because not only would they lose faith in the programs that we're implementing to protect human health and the environment, but you also have to deal with a lot of people that are extremely unhappy with their properties happen to be dug up with in the first place. All in all, you know, it turned out good that the backfill material that they had provided did meet the quality standards that was addressed in the performance work statement for the contractor. And I guess the best thing one of the biggest things that I got out of it, having been a recently appointed RPM on this site and not being familiar with all of the nuances of managing a project of this magnitude, is that, you know, ORD did this work in a very timely fashion, and there was absolutely no cost at all to the project. So it was, all in all, it was a win-win situation as well for the contractor, because we probably could have ultimately had them develop some sort of a plan, and I would imagine that would have come at a fairly good expense to this contractor. So be that as it may, ORD is a very good a resource for RPMs to use. You know, I'm not a statistician in any way, shape, or form, and their technical support was very valuable. I guess I'll turn it over now to Matt Turner.
I'm sorry. Okay. We are on slide number 85. My name is Matt Jefferson. I am an ARPM co-chair, and I originally gave this presentation at the NARPM conference in May. I'm also the project manager for the Conservation Chemical site. And basically what today I'm highlighting the how ORD Technical Support Center is plugged into my particular site, the Conservation Chemical. And we end up using two of the technical support centers, the Groundwater Support Center, Dave Burton's group, from Ada, Oklahoma, and also Dave Reisman's group, the Engineering Support Center out of Cincinnati, Ohio. So, but just to kind of get folks up to speed on the Conservation Chemical sites and some of the issues that we were dealing with, and please turn to slide number 86. The Conservation Chemical site is located in Kansas City, Missouri. Near the Missouri River, the site itself was a waste disposal and treatment facility, roughly about a mile away from the Missouri River. And on the site, the operator was basically collected a variety of different chemicals, placed them within lagoons, accepting industrial waste, including waste from federal facilities, and you name it. Some of the waste that are listed that he accepted were acids, alkaline metal finishers, cyanides, refinery waste, solvents, organics, arsenic, and elemental phosphorus also. Part of the intent was to actually recover some of those chemicals and to sell them back. Of course, none of those lagoons were unlined, all those lagoons were unlined. And as you can see by the photo that's depicted on this particular slide, didn't do a very good job in terms of managing the waste that he did accept it. He accepted somewhere around 300,000 tons of chemicals. We don't know the exact number, because when we went to do the search on the records, Unfortunately, they had burned up, so somebody had set the repository on fire, and it left us guessing on that. And the owner had operated the facility from 1960 to 1976. Next slide, slide number 87, sort of shows what the site looks like. Conservation Chemical there is right in the smack dab in the middle of the photograph there. On the right hand side, upper right hand corner, is the Missouri River. A couple of facilities are nearby it, off on the, and you can see that off on the left hand side. That's Kansas Power and Light on towards the upper end of the left hand side, and the lower end is the Bayer Crop Science facility. Site was placed on the NPL in 1984, one of the region's earliest sites, and a record decision was signed back in 1987. Consent decree, of course, is done in 1988, and here's the real kicker. This consent decree was actually, the decision was done by the judge. There were multiple parties involved with this particular site, and with CERCLA being incredibly new at that time, there were over 200 parties, including federal parties. And there was a lot of back and forth going on between those particular parties. So I think at the time the judge had his limits and decided to pick the remedy itself. Unfortunately, it led to problems that we are seeing now. So, another important point is the consent decree did not contain any cost recovery or special account. We do not recover costs on this particular site. And it is a PRP-led site. There are four main, companies that sort of lead the actual construction operation of the remedy itself. They constructed the pump and treat system. They also installed a cap on and covered the lagoons at the site. Finalized and completed construction back in 1991, and it's been in O&M ever since. And so that's put quite a few. The site has been in O&M for that long of a period, and it's sort of fell off the radar in a lot of ways since there hadn't been a lot of construction activity involved with it. And so one of the other things is, as I list on the last bullet there, is we're a smaller region, and a lot of the oversight that we do is done by ourselves. We don't hire contractors here. We don't actually get a lot of funding, and so we have to rely a lot on our own resources and our own hydrogeologists, and that may not necessarily be in the same case with larger regions, but that is another constraint that we have to deal with in this site. So going on to slide number 89, so moving on to the issues, after we sort of looked onto looked at the site, we sort of noticed that there was some issues with groundwater capture, and we had about 20 monitoring wells on site, along with two extraction wells to help contain the contaminants there. Most of those monitoring wells were sort of lined up perpendicular to the Missouri River, or what was thought as being the groundwater flow migrating towards the groundwater flow towards the Missouri River. And since the remedy was picked by the judge, we hadn't done a complete remedial investigation. And so part of the investigation states that there is actually an underground river channel that exists under the site that does not go along the same lines as what we had thought the flow was going to be. So that pulls into question of, do we actually have groundwater capture at the site? Another thing that we had done back in 2005, we had also done some investigations off-site, and we found that there was the same chemicals, contaminants, off of about a mile downstream in the sediments. And so that sort of brings into, again, questions whether or not we have complete capture here. And that sort of was highlighted with the five-year review. They had pointed out several different issues along with ecological concerns in the sediments within the Missouri River, and also concerns with the treatment plant process. So, again, we're on slide 89. Moving on to slide 90, looking at the pump and treat system, here's a schematic of it, and basically how to read this. We're starting up from the upper left-hand corner. You see the two extraction wells, and then we have a coagulation, a flocculation process in the next series using sodium hydroxide. And then it goes into a series of bio towers, and then into a sand dual media filter, and then as a polishing step with a GAC, a carbon filter system there. And then through once the water has been processed through the GAC, it's discharged through a NPDES permit to the Missouri River. So, it's a very complicated treatment process, but we do have, you know, basically the seafood soup of chemical contaminants here. So moving on to the next slide. So looking at the various issues, not only from the document standpoint, but also technically, we really need to pull into both the Groundwater Technical Support Center to evaluate the capture, to look at the look at also where do we need to focus our attention in terms of the ecological impacts of the Missouri River, and then also pull in the Engineering Support Center to evaluate also the treatment plant and see and optimize that treatment plant. And so that's where we're at this point in time. I want to reiterate what Kira had mentioned earlier. I think both working with the Engineering and Groundwater Technical Support Centers worked well with our team here. I think they plugged in perfectly in terms of providing that national presence of knowing all the sites within the nation and providing that expertise and helping us in optimizing this particular remedy. Right now we're at the very early stages. The advice I would give for RPMs would be, and we're moving on to slide 92, is to really establish contact with your Superfund technical liaison. And Felicia mentioned those names at the beginning here. Be clear and set goals and deadlines for your technical support center, and keep regular communication. Those are really the take-home messages that I'd like to give to folks here. So thank you again, and I'm going to turn it over to Jean.
Okay, great. So we are going to take time for questions and answers with our instructors today before we close things out. I do have a number of questions that have been submitted electronically. So if you did type one up, don't worry, your question is in the queue. But before I turn to those questions, I want to start with individuals who might be on the phone line. So if you're on the phone, you have a question or comment for one of our presenters today, you're welcome to take yourself off of mute and go ahead and ask your question directly. Again, if you muted your line with our command, it's #6 to unmute the phone.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is Bill Brandon in Region 1. I think the question's addressed to all of the ORD speakers anyway, and maybe some of the RPMs have some insight, but Dave Reisman and I think Dave Burden both mentioned technology testing, and I want to know what resources are out there for technology testing on Superfund sites, including such things as developing new technologies or refining new technologies involving patents and so on.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hey, Dave.
Actually, there's been some recent developments, and I'm glad you asked that question. As far as two of the previous programs that were well known in the PIPE program and the Mine Waste Technology program, Congress took care of them about 3 years ago and 4 years ago. So those programs have been eliminated. As far as the tech support centers, with our limited budget, we are doing some testing on a limited basis. One you're familiar with up in Callahan Mine, we're doing some testing and through joint funding of the region, the state, and our center, actually building a pilot biochemical reactor next week. There is the ETV program, which still exists in is alive and well in Cincinnati, but that's basically for commercially ready or commercially available technologies. As far as developmental technologies, there's a new, it's called, I think, WTIC, the Water Technology Information Center or something like that, and they will be coming out with an announcement shortly within the next few weeks on approximately $2 million available for demonstration-type funding.
Okay.
And that's basically, other than the centers and the small technology testing, that's basically as far as an ORD. The other program, we do work closely with the CERTA program, with what used to be NIHS's Superfund Basic Research Program, which is, I think, just the Superfund Research Program now, and NIHS, and a couple other small programs. And finally would be the ENSER, the National Center for Environmental Research, who we do submit some ideas to them, and they go out in their announcement. I believe their announcement is closed for this year, and we take part in reviewing and evaluating some of those proposals. So I think that's the gamut of the major existing programs. Excuse me.
Yeah, there's really just no programs out there that replace kind of what PIPE used to be able to do for RPMs. So it's really a matter of, you know, if you're an RPM that really is interested in using a more innovative technology, what I have done in that case is more like what Dave was saying, which is really try to be innovative and cobble together funding from some of these various places that are still funding some level of research with really one that Dave didn't mention too is ESTCP that's associated with CERTEP. If it's a DOD facility, that's an option. You know, they've got some ongoing work, but there really is no funding pot for RPM to access. Let's say I have my own idea of something that I want to develop on my site. There's no funding out there to be doing anything like that.
That's unfortunate, but what can anybody say or tell me about this? There was an announcement on something called the ORD Pathfinder Initiative. That was maybe, I don't know, a year ago. Is that viable, or was that a one-time thing? Or
no, there's actually a new announcement out for that right now. For the coming year, but I don't know, Felicia, if you want to jump in on that anymore, but they weren't really funding site-specific technology development under that program.
Actually, that deadline was last week, I believe. So, yeah, but you're right. Those weren't really targeted for site-specific. It was for basic research in ORD.
Right.
How come I didn't hear about it? And if, you know, I guess that's what I want to know.
Well, not targeted for ORD is probably why.
What region are you?
One. So it's
one.
They're tapping into ORD only. Is that right?
Yes.
That doesn't
yes.
seem to, you know. Well, here I am, someone with from a region, and I've got all kinds of ideas that I don't see you guys coming up with, and I'd like to collaborate with ORD to test them out on site. So how do you do that? You
know, I would get with your STL, because your STL has the opportunity to put in a proposal.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are two other programs, Bill, one you're aware of. There's the RARE program, which gives up to $200,000 to, I believe, each region every year, and it goes through your regional science liaison. There's one in each region. And there's also what's called the reserve. It's big R, little E, and then SERV. And
reserve.
We have, through the Tech Support Center, we have several RARE and one reserve project underway already. The RARE and reserve for FY12 should be announced, I think it's usually announced in the spring.
Yeah, they're pretty good about letting us know about RARE here and something called RM. Never heard of reserve before. So I'll have to look into that.
That's with the Eco Services Program.
Yeah, I've got a reserve project with Region 10.
Okay.
So we're usually open to those. One of the things in, like, the RARE program is it's a regional person, an ORD person, and a headquarters person. So you need the triad to even apply in under that program. And, again, the STL can help you.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the other thing, though, is the region gets to pick usually the DRA or the RA or somebody is responsible for choosing those projects. So the region has some control about which ones get picked.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, the only other idea I have for you that I have used on a few of my sites is that there's many of the universities now that are hosting centers for commercialization of technologies. For example, the University of Utah has been doing some work with a company that's got some biological communities they've harvested out of Montana that can survive in really acidic conditions that they're looking at trying to develop and market as a remediation tool. And you can do some research on the internet or get your STL to do that. And sometimes you can find collaborative partnerships with universities that already have funding that are just looking for sites.
That's a great idea. Thanks.
Okay, great. If anybody else on the phone lines has a question, again, you're welcome to take yourself off of mute by hitting #6 and then asking your question or making your comment directly to one of the speakers. Okay, since I don't hear anything else on the phones for now, let's go ahead and turn to some of the questions that have been submitted electronically. I'm going to just start reading them out loud, and then amongst the speakers, I guess if you guys have an answer, feel free to identify yourself and then provide your response. But and many of these questions may have actually been answered as you went through your presentation materials, but I just want to be sure that you guys have a chance to kind of recap and provide a response. So the first one comes in, and it's an anonymous question, and they're asking, does the TSP provide EPA-based, for example, in parentheses, by EPA employees support, or are these contractors who support EPA?
Read that again.
Basically, they're asking, does TSP provide EPA-based, in parentheses, EPA employees, or are these contractors who support the EPA? I guess they want to know.
The answer is both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think
this
all of
Dave
the centers.
Burton.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Dave.
This is Dave Burton. I mean, you know, we have EPA staff in our tech support branch that provide the tech support, and we also have contractors. And the contractors are there to basically supplement the EPA staff. But the EPA staff are ORD employees. They're not provided by the TSP. They are the tech support project. They are ORD employees that are managed, the FTE are managed by the National Risk Management Research Lab.
Yeah, it seems like with looking at some of the web-based questions, Gene, that there's a little bit of confusion about TSP versus ORD and the tech support centers.
Mm-hmm.
The usually when people are referring to TSP, that's the tech support program, which is the program that's supported through TIVC that encompasses the groundwater forum and the engineering forum and the federal facilities forum. Those are all made up of actual EPA employees that have expertise in those various areas. They work collaboratively many times with, for example, the Groundwater Tech Support Center, but they're not the same thing. So I just wanted to make sure people realize that, because many of the questions here up on the web seem to use those in an interchange fashion, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily the same thing.
Okay. Well, thank you. And keeping that in mind, I'm just going to continue to go through some of these. The next one is asking if ORD or the TSP can help regulatory agencies from the state.
Sure.
So I think they're asking if the lead on the site is a state agency as opposed to EPA. Can they provide assistance?
Providing the region gives us permission. For example, Callahan Mine, we're working directly with the state, but the EPA RPM is aware of what we're doing, and we keep him aware. But this happens probably on 5 or 6 sites a year, at least in our center. And Dave?
Yeah, I would agree. We have help at the state level, but I always, when I get those requests, if the state contacts me directly, I request that they go through an EPA regional person, either an RPM or a STL, so that, that the region is on board with it. I don't want to sidetrack the region on any state request.
That's true. With me as well, we have helped out the state. We did a little training for one of the states on the statistical programs that we have. But it always has to come, and usually with some kind of blessing from the regions. And, of course, it can be limited based on, you know, the way budgets are going, because obviously priorities have to go to, you know, EPA projects.
Yeah, good point, Felicia.
And then as far as the TSP goes, or the engineering forums and the groundwater forums, states are invited to participate on those. So I think one of the challenges is there isn't necessarily funding that comes along with that, but it, for sure from the standpoint of the forums, they welcome the participation by state members that are interested in participating in those networks.
Okay, great. I think we've addressed the next question already, and that was asking if TSP or ORD work to verify technology performance. And if you feel you have sufficiently answered that one, go ahead and let me know, and I'll move on to the next question.
Be careful of the word verification to whoever's asking that question. If it's verification or validation, for example, the only ORD program is the ETV, which verification's in their name. That doesn't include some of the program offices that do have validation, or like the Energy Star program. So as far as ORD is concerned, it would be ETV only.
Okay, great. The next question I think we've also touched on, but just to be sure we can summarize your response, they ask, how does one access support? Is it as simple as requesting it, or is there a prioritization process for selecting sites to assist?
It's requesting it through the regions, through either the STL, would be your first point of contact in the region, and then the STL can work with the person in the region and contact the appropriate tech support center director.
And if the STL isn't available, you can send it direct to us, the STL. And usually when we get back, we'll also be discussing with the STL. And then the purpose of that is just to keep the information and communication flowing. As far as prioritization on the project, obviously if it's a long-term project, it's going to have different priorities as it moves through, but that's discussed in an initial email or phone call.
Yeah, that's I'd reiterate the same. You can definitely contact us directly, but I'm going to usually, if I respond back, CC your regional contacts within ORD, the STL, and sometimes even the RSL if it's appropriate. Really the only time I get into any kind of prioritization is when, like I said, as Dave mentioned, it's a long-term project and it gets too big. We can't fund but certain size projects. If we're doing a lot of work on a site, then there might be some, like I said, there might have to be matching funding, that sort of thing from the region, and that comes into it. But generally, unless the budget is just getting exceptionally tight, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to do everything, which I haven't yet had to turn anybody down, or at least not for money reasons. We've run across stuff where we really just didn't think we'd be able to help, but there isn't any standard prioritization that I have, that the Site Characterization Tech Support Center has.
Yeah, just as a reminder, the list of STLs or Superfund technical liaisons are listed on slide number 12. And also, even if just similar to my site, Conservation Chemical, and Dan Kellerman's site, even if you're relatively new to your site, just go ahead and have a chat with your STL and give as much information as possible, and list that problem that you're having with it, or something that you may think is an issue. They can certainly get you connected with one of the technical support centers.
Okay, great. The next question is in reference to slide number 43, and they ask where the data came from that was used to generate that chart.
Which slide was that again?
It's slide number 43, and it's basically there are charts indicating technologies used on sites.
That's your slide, Dave.
We generate that slide every year. We were going to try to do it over 10 years. That's generated from all the existing sites that we worked on in FY10, meaning the chemicals of concern. And then, again, that's the primary 1, 2, and 3 chemicals of concern. And for the technologies, those were the technologies that were either being used or proposed in the record of decision or that have been proposed leading towards the record of decision. So that's where the data all comes from. It used to be accessible on the intranet. It'll be accessible once again once ORD finishes redoing the web pages. It's a system called STARS, the Site Tracking and Reporting System, and that was and will be available to all internal EPA staff.
Okay, great. I think we've sort of touched on, I think Kira highlighted it earlier and it's been repeated, talking about the various technical support avenues that are offered to RPMs, which include support from TIFC, the Technology Innovation and Field Services Division, TSP, ERT, ORD, but I don't think we need to reiterate that. But there's another question that's coming in from DC, and they ask that, we've talked about all of these different resources from ORD, TIFC, ERT, and that they can all sort of work together as a team. But who actually coordinates the work of the team? Does that fall on the RPM shoulder?
I think it depends on the project, because I know as the STL in Region 10 now that I'm actually doing that for the RPM on some projects where they felt overwhelmed and they wanted assistance with being able to do that. But in the case when I was an RPM, I was doing it for myself. So I think every project is going to be a little different depending on kind of the level of that coordination required, but there's flexibility there for who's going to take the lead on that. With, in most cases, unless the RPM has somebody else to rely on, it really falls on the shoulder of the RPM.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that was the answer to the question or there's a different answer, because the coordination, is it the ORD coordination? Are they asking, for example, on the projects that we, Dan, Kira, and Matt did, the RPM did some of the internal coordination, but again, Dave, Felicia, and I often coordinate with each other. For example, Felicia and I worked on several sites with the chemical-specific investigations, doing the fingerprinting, and we used a common contractor because Felicia does use some of our Cincinnati-based contractors. So, like Kira says, it's going to depend on the project, but internal to ORD, we generally communicate among ourselves and copy the RPM or other project team members as needed.
Okay, great. The next question is coming from ORD in Region 2, and they ask, how are the costs of ORD assistance taken care of? For example, are the regions charged for assistance?
Your turn, Dave.
Well, this is Felicia. I was going to there's a budget that I won't go into all the details of how that's given out, but the regions are not directly charged for usually initial work and a lot of the work that's done by the tech support centers. It's only when the funding gets to be either, like I said, an excessively large project, or there's a few times I think where we've gotten on to the end of the year when the budgets have started to get really tight, where there's been a need for the regions to provide funding. Like I said, there's been matching funding, but no, a lot of this work does not cost the region anything at all. It can, but we'll discuss that with you when you bring the project up or if it gets, like I said, becomes larger over time. And the region has the option to, you know, we'll give them the options of what can be done. And I think that'd be pretty much true for the other two tech support centers, isn't that so, Dave?
Yeah. You summarized it well, Felicia.
There's a little clarification. As far as we also are giving a site-specific travel budget, it's part of the budget, and so our travel to site is not coming out of the region's budget. It gets charged back to a headquarters budget. But we do enter the site code, and that eventually comes back to your region, which then circular comes back to Cincinnati Finance if there's a responsible party and chargebacks to the site. Likewise, for any ORD time spent on a site, because we're research and development employees, our labor costs cannot be charged back to the site unless we're in, for example, travel status, and then it's charged via People Plus. So when an RPM looks at their cost sheets and chargeback, they'll see those charges, but they do not come out of the regional budget.
So the only exception I would make that to Dave is that, and Diane, you just need to make sure that you've checked on this, is that in depending on the type of support, like when I got the support from the Las Vegas folks to come out and travel to my site to do the Institute Gamma work, it was all EPA employees, so their labor was covered, but I needed to cross fund and pay their travel because they didn't have funding money to do travel. So in certain cases, depending on who you're getting the support from ORD, they may need funding for travel.
Thank you, yeah, because Las Vegas used to be funded under that program, but no longer. And again, with the site-specific funding, for example, we have and can fund ORD people in other locations to join us in the site, especially if they're part of the team. So again, that's worked out site-specific, but I just want to assure that in most cases, there's no charge back to the region for our labor time, or travel, or the research, unless we're doing the joint. That's well spelled out, so the RPM or OSC wouldn't know that in advance.
Okay. The next question asks if there, and this also might be part of that confusion between the TSPA and ORD, but they're asking if there's an annual TSP meeting or how one can interact with TSP members.
Well, and the answer to that is that there is an annual meeting of the forums, which are make up the TSP. This year the meeting is scheduled to take place in May. If you go to the TSP website, you can find out who the leads are for each of the forums, and there's information on the forums on that site, so that anybody who's interested in learning more about the forums, I would recommend that that's what you do, or you can email me and I can get you in contact with the appropriate people once I know what forum you're interested in.
Okay. Our next question is related, but they'd like to know how specifically EPA staff can either join or contribute to the TSP's knowledge or support capabilities.
I think that's the same answer, right? The TSPs are completely open for people to join them.
And most of the TSP members are regional staff.
So there's no nomination procedure. They don't need management approval.
Well, you always need your management approval because it's going to take your time to participate. But they don't limit who can be members based on like some kind of voting or nomination.
Right. Did they have votes, nominations for the heads of the different forums, but I don't know of any restrictions that they have for, you know, how many people can be in the forums themselves. And certainly it's not from the, from the forum. If there's any restriction, it's coming from the region itself and, like you said, their management, anything like that, how many people they can support to go to the meetings and attend and that sort of thing.
Okay.
There's also, we should also point out that there are three forums. There's the Federal Facility Forum, Groundwater Forum, and the Engineering Forum. Those make up the three TSP.
Okay, and then the last question that I see online right now, and I think, again, we've highlighted this, but with budget cuts, is there any concern that the ORD support or TSP support will go away in the near future?
I'm not sure it will go away. It may be cut back, and that will all depend on the budgets that we get in, you know, FY12 and beyond.
Yeah, I don't know that we can say anything more. Admittedly, everybody's getting tighter budgets, whether it be travel, whatever, and we have to work within the limitations that we have. But, there's been no hints of any complete cut. But there certainly budgets have gotten tighter as the years have progressed.
Okay. And I'm going to go back to the phone line to see if anybody else on the phones has any last comments or questions. Again, if you're on mute, you can unmute with your own button, or if you use our command, that's #6 to unmute your phone lines.
This is Bill again with another question. You presented earlier about these, what you're calling tech support projects, and I recall from talking to my STL that they were in jeopardy some years back and maybe even were eliminated. Is this a reconstitution of them, or they, you know, never went away, or what's the story?
It never went away.
Okay.
Yeah, the tech support project has basically been, there may have been some issues of, you know, how many meetings to have. I think they're even still discussing that because, of course, the cost of travel.
No, I'm talking about the tech support centers.
The centers themselves.
Yeah.
Still the same. None of them have gone away. There was a transfer. My tech support center used to be located specifically in Vegas, and now it's been moved to the Office of Science Policy and out of the lab, at least the management of it. But it did not go away.
So consolidation, perhaps, rather than elimination? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Well, yeah, and they suffered some budget cuts with how much they were being given as far as resources for us to access. There's no question about that.
Okay.
But they haven't gone away completely.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. I don't hear any other questions coming in on the phone lines. And it looks like we have a comment that was submitted online coming in from EPA out in California. And they mentioned that there's been a recent addition to the TSP webpage, which is an expertise directory that lists members of the three forums and their experience and expertise in contact info. So you are, they're suggesting that you use it freely to supplement the TSC support as well. So thank you very much for that comment. So looking at the time, we're coming up approximately 5 minutes from the end time for today. So I don't hear any other comments or questions on the phone, and I don't see anything else coming in online. So I just want to give our presenters a chance to make any final closing comments or statements before I officially wrap everything up and provide our final reminders. So I'll start with you, Felicia. Any final comments or statements?
What this was for is to let people know that we're out here. We want to help. Tech support and tech transfer is important to us. And if you have questions, just contact either your SPL in-house or one of the tech support center directors, and we'll see what we can do for you.
Okay, great. Dave Burden?
No comment.
Matt Jefferson?
I guess I want to just reiterate Felicia's comment just to remind RPMs that if you've got a complicated situation and you feel like you need to get some support, you know, some additional support, these technical support centers are there to help. So please contact your STL.
Okay, great. Daniel?
No comments.
Okay. Kira?
No comment.
Okay, and Dave Reisman?
Just we're here to help, and have a nice holiday season, everybody.
Okay, great. So with that, I'm going to ask everyone to move along to slide number 93, which is the final slide in today's presentation materials. On slide number 93, you'll find links to the two pages I mentioned when we started things. The first one is our additional resources page, where you can not only download today's PowerPoint presentation, but look at the NARPM training schedule, and we can also include other resources. If any of the speakers come up with something else they think that should be added later on, we can certainly put that up there. For example, the list of the STLs, we could post that on the resources page. The other link that you'll find is the link to our feedback form. It is very short. It should just take you a minute or two to fill that out. I do read each and every single response, so we would ask that you take a moment to fill that out and let us know what you thought of today's session. If you're looking to get credit for your participation today, when you fill out feedback, there's a box you can check to have a confirmation message sent to you for your own records. So it'll at least verify that you submitted feedback for the event on a certain date at a certain time from a certain machine. We don't necessarily, you know, provide automatic verification emails. You have to submit the feedback form and check the box to have that email sent to you for your own records. If you share the line with multiple participants, once someone submits that feedback form, there'll be a link that will allow you to have somebody else fill out the form so they can get their own email and their own records sent to their own address. You can certainly do that for each individual participant. And both of those links are available from the bottom of the seminar homepage. So if you're just looking at a print copy of the materials today, you can go back to the seminar homepage and access both the resources page and the feedback form at a later time, whenever's convenient. As I mentioned, today's session was recorded, and it'll be up and available for free download or replay in about 1 to 2 weeks. You will automatically get an email from me letting you know as soon as that archive is available. So I would encourage you to keep your eyes peeled for that, and feel free to forward it on to anyone that you think might find it useful. I want to extend my thanks to the NARPM committee, as well as all of the presenters who were able to come together today to re-deliver their presentation. And I also want to thank all of the RPMs and other support staff who joined us from across the country today for today's CLUIN seminar. I hope that you found this to be a useful expenditure of your time today, and that we will hear from you or have you participate in a future CLUIN seminar. This is the formal conclusion of today's event. Thank you all. I hope you have a great rest of your day.